From Washington, this is VOA News.
Stay tuned.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. New Brazilian President Michel Temer is appealing for unity following a Senate vote to impeach and remove his predecessor, Dilma Rousseff, for violating budgetary rules during her 2014 re-election.
Assumo a presidência do Brasil após decisão.
Mr. Temer, in a national address, said he assumes office after a transparent and democratic decision by the National Congress. It's a moment of hope, he said, to retake confidence in Brazil. Latin American analyst Mark Jones of Rice University said the new leader faces a host of challenges, including a deep recession.
First, the Brazilian economy is deep in the doldrums. Second, many on the left believe that this was an undemocratic pseudo-coup and are unlikely to accept Temer as the country's legitimate president, engaging in protests and generally trying to obstruct his government's process.
Jones said Mr. Temer, who is to remain in office until 2018, along with much of his cabinet, is also a target of corruption investigations. Mr. Temer said his priority is to fix Brazil's economy, attract foreign investment, reduce unemployment, and begin reform of the pension system. Ms. Rousseff called the 61-20 Senate vote Wednesday a parliamentary coup, maintaining her innocence. In Gabon, opposition presidential candidate Jean Ping is reported as claiming that two people were killed as security forces stormed opposition headquarters after incumbent President Ali Bongo was declared winner Wednesday of Saturday's delayed election. Clashes erupted after the announcement. Parliament building in the capital, Libreville, was set on fire. Ping, a veteran African diplomat, has insisted he won the election. Mr. Bongo was declared winner, receiving just 50% of the vote, under 50%, while Ping got just over 48%. This is VOA News. The United States has discounted Russia's claim it carried out the airstrike in Syria Tuesday that killed Islamic State's chief spokesman and strategist. Peter Cook is a defense spokesman at the Pentagon.
Russia, as you know, has spent most of its time, its military campaign, supporting and propping up the Assad regime. It has not devoted much, if any, effort that we're aware of, targeting ISIL's leadership.
Cook said Wednesday U.S. officials continue to assess results of the airstrike targeting Abu Mohammed el-Adnani. Meanwhile, Russia's defense ministry said its warplanes killed up to 40 IS militants, including Adnani, during a bombing raid near Aleppo province. The U.S. Wednesday criticized Israel for plans to accelerate the building of settlements in the occupied West Bank. A White House spokesman said this significant expansion of settlement activity poses a serious and growing threat to the viability of a two-state solution. U.S. spokesman John Kirby referenced a report issued by the Mideast Diplomatic Quartet of Nations earlier this year.
So far this year, Israel has promoted plans for over 2,500 units, including over 700 units retroactively approved in the West Bank. We are particularly troubled by the policy of retroactively approving unauthorized settlement units and outposts that are themselves illegal under Israeli law.
An Israeli government spokesman said Jews have lived in the region for centuries. Their presence, he said, is no obstacle to peace. In Yemen, the rebel-held state news agency said the Saudi-led coalition struck a house in the northern city of Sa'ada early Wednesday, killing at least 16 civilians. There was no immediate reaction from the coalition. The Saudis have targeted Houthi rebels from the Yemeni capital to the north in a mostly air campaign which began March of last year. U.S. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump delivered a major address on illegal immigration late Wednesday at a campaign rally before thousands in Arizona. The speech came after he held what he called straightforward talks in Mexico with President Enrique Peña Nieto, where the flow of illegal immigrants has become a major U.S. campaign issue.
Under a Trump administration, it's called America First. Remember that. To choose immigrants based on merit, skill, and proficiency. Doesn't that sound nice?
Earlier at a Mexico City news conference, Trump said he loves the U.S., wants to make sure the American people are protected. He said the issue involves jobs and crime. Nigeria acknowledged Wednesday its economy is now in recession after announcing it contracted more than 2% in the second quarter. It declined a fraction of a percent in the first quarter. The West African nation has been hit hard by declining oil prices, militant attacks, and a foreign exchange currency shortage. I'm Victor Beatty reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, the first day of September, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gabonese President Ali Bongo welcomes his narrow re-election victory, even as protests have broken out.
President Bongo is thankful for Gabonese people who have re-elected him. He's aware how deep this responsibility is, and he wants the country to stay in peace.
Igwe Osimhen is the advisor to Gabonese President Ali Bongo Ondimba. The trial of 10 Sudanese civil society activists has begun in Khartoum. Burundi takes steps to curb rising prostitution. And Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party postpones today's nationwide protest called the Day of Defiance.
Actually, it's not canceled. We just postponed for another 1 month because yesterday, spiritual leaders decided to meet our team to try to be mediator between us and the government because they feel that they need to speak to the president before we continue with our plan.
Peter Msigwa is a Chadema member of parliament, and African movie actors and directors learn from their counterparts in Hollywood. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Gabon's incumbent president, Ali Bongo Ondimba, has thanked citizens for re-electing him for a second four-year term. This after the National Election Commission say Bongo won re-election with 49.85% of the total vote cast. His main opponent and former African Union Commission chairman, Jean Ping, garnered 48.16%. Clashes broke out immediately in the capital, Libreville, following the announcement. Ping has challenged the results and has demanded a total vote recount in President Bongo's stronghold. Igor Simon, advisor to President Bongo, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the incumbent president won a transparent and credible election.
President Bongo is thankful for Gabonese people to have re-elected him. He's aware how deep this responsibility is, and he wants the country to stay in peace. And he want to bring change that people requested.
Some people said that Jean Ping, his main challenger, won the election. Jean Ping said that he won it and that the election was manipulated in favor of the president. What do you say to that?
I think this election was very, very tough for all candidates. So there's the Constitutional Court where the opposition can petition, and this is the place to do it. Not in the street, in the Constitutional Court. And if they've got real proof and real assessments, of course, they would be heard. But for us, we are very confident because we decided since the beginning to go with an electoral campaign respectful of laws. And we never encourage people to violences or to ethnic votes. We really insisted on about the program of the president. And this is how we manage the campaign.
Jean Ping campaign team has called for a recount of the election, possibly in Hotogui, because they said the elections were manipulated and that over 98% of the people voted. And that is one critical point where the president allegedly manipulated the election to favor him. What do you say to that?
In 2009, if you look at the results from the Hotogui provinces, they are almost the same. The second thing, it's the ethnic vote is the consequences of the words pronounced by Jean Ping when he just threatened Gabonese people as cockroaches. A lot of people have been hurt by what Mr. Jean Ping said and just decided to support the president. And if you look at the records in 2009, it's almost the same.
Talking about the ethnic vote, if the ethnic votes really played a critical role in the election or the re-election of President Bongo, that gives the opposition the armor to say that the president has not united the country.
Unity is always a work in progress. So this is in Gabon, this is the fact in Gabon, and everywhere. Unity is always a work in progress, and this is what the president will work on.
Would you say that the election was free, fair, transparent, and credible? Because the European Union said the election was not transparent. What do you say to that?
The critical of the European Union was not about the election. It was about the laws. They participated to the election, and we are the only country in Central Africa which invited the European Union because we want the European Union to make some points to help the Gabonese democracy to improve. So we accepted them to come and Gabon, and we are proud to have invited them. Now, we've got many, many different observers from all around the world, and European Union are one of them. But all in general, they believe that the election was fair and credible.
How does the president want to move the country forward now that it appears that the country is divided and that he did not win over 50% of the votes that usually happens? This he won by a simple majority.
President did a campaign on changes. He considered that he is the best candidate to bring changes, and this is what he's going to do. So the reason why people elected him is, one of the reasons is they believe that he is the best man to do it so. So I think this is precisely what he's going to do. This is why people just elected him.
What do you say that the opposition are saying that a lot of people in the president camp betrayed him, they refused to campaign for him and all that despite the promises they made to the president. And they say that that shows that the president is not loved or is not respected like he makes the world and some Gabonese to believe. What do you say to that?
Well, I believe this is politics, as simple as it is.
Igor Simon is advisor to Gabonese President Ali Bongo. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Libreville. Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party, has called off today's Day of Defiance protest against the government of President John Magufuli. The police had declined to grant permission for the protest, accusing Chadema of trying to disturb the peace of the nation. Also, there were fears the protest could result in violence, but Peter Msigwa, a Chadema member of parliament, says the protest was not cancelled but rather postponed after Tanzanian spiritual leaders agreed to mediate between the government and Chadema. President Magufuli, who came to power in 2015, gained popularity domestically and throughout Africa for his war against corruption and inefficiency in government. But Msigwa says the president's international image is cosmetic.
Actually, it's not cancelled. We just postponed it for another 1 month because yesterday, spiritual leaders decided to meet our team to try to negotiate, to be mediator between us and the government. They wanted us to have maybe to wait until after 2 weeks to 3 weeks because they feel that they need to speak to the president or to the government before we continue with our plan.
You call this demonstration a day of defiance. Why choose that name? Why are you being defiant?
We choose that name because we feel that we Tanzanians, all of us, that we want the rule of law. We need to hold our hands together to stop this way of leadership, that we feel the way the president is leading our country is leading us to a dictatorship regime because he doesn't comply with our constitution. He doesn't follow the rule of law. So we chose this name so that all of us we can unite and hold our hands no matter our political ideology. It's a symbol that it's like a wall so that we can stop this way of leadership to continue in our country.
Now, you canceled you say, by the way, it's not really canceled, but the police had said that they refused to give you permission for the protest, instead accusing your party, Chadema, of trying to disturb the peace of the country. Did you cancel or did you postpone because the police harass your leadership or because the police refuse you permission?
Actually, we feel that the police, they are used by the politician because our argument is political. We are the political party. We expected the CCM, which is a political party, to come back to us politically, but they are coming to us in a different way. They are coming at us using police force, and now tomorrow the army is all over the country. Today the fighting jet were just flying all over Dar es Salaam trying to scare people so that people won't come out to the demonstration. So the police, they are just using that we are disturbing peace as a political gimmick, but in reality we are not causing any trouble in the country. It's a peace demonstration that we are trying to do. We are challenging the government that actually the president is not leading our country according to our constitution. He is leading us in a dictatorship way.
You have accused President Magufuli of dictatorial leadership. But those of us on the outside, we know a different Magufuli. We know his fight against corruption and his attempt to bring about kind of efficiency in how the Tanzanian government run. So we are kind of surprised to hear you say that the president is a dictator.
From the outside, it's very cosmetic. from the outside, he looks very good, unless you are in the country. I understand that there's a lot of corruption in our country. I know there are things that are not okay. But what we are trying to say, he should deal with corruption and try to bring the country's dignity in the right way. We cannot stop corruption at the expense of democracy. We cannot restore the glory of our nation at the expense of human rights, to the expense of good governance. What we are asking from him is about good governance, democracy, and human rights. And he looks like he doesn't understand about democracy and human rights. In his process, he's not following the rules of the country, how to deal with those people who are maybe are accused of corruption. He's killing democracy in the country. From the outside, it looks like he's doing a good thing, but in the reality, he's silencing everybody who is trying to challenge him to rule the country according to the law of the country.
If you say that the demonstration was not canceled, when do you hope to have it again?
We discussed with the spiritual leaders, and the spiritual leaders actually also, they told us that they asked to meet him, and they were surprised because he refused. So they told us we should give them 2 to 3 weeks. They are going to meet him, and if he refuses, they say they will be part of us because now they feel that's too much. So we agreed with them that we give them 1 month. They must talk to him, discuss to him so that maybe we can sit on the table. All that we want is the rule of law. If he refuses, the 1st of October, that will be Saturday, we will continue with our demonstration.
Peter Msigwa is a member of parliament for the opposition Chadema Party of Tanzania. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, the first day of September. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on our affiliate station, Kisi FM in Tanzania, Capital FM in Blantyre, Malawi, and Kira FM in Jinja, Uganda. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. The trial of 10 Sudanese civil society activists got underway in Khartoum this week, despite calls by local, regional, and international rights groups for the government to drop all charges against the activists. The men on trial, who are affiliated with a training and development organization based in Khartoum, are accused of committing crimes against the state. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Khartoum.
The African Center for Justice and Peace Studies, Amnesty International, Defend Defenders, the International Federation for Human Rights, and other rights groups have condemned the trial. Defense lawyer Muhammad Mustafa says the charges against the 10 men are serious. Some carry the death penalty if convicted. But speaking in Arabic, Mustafa says the government's case against the activists is flimsy. He says these charges are all related to crimes against the state, such as Article 50, Article 51, Article 53, and Article 65. I expect the court to dismiss this case due to a lack of any credible evidence. Article 50 of Sudan's Penal Code stipulates the penalty for undermining the constitutional order. Article 51 talks about instigating war against the state. Article 53 spells out what constitutes espionage, and Article 65 details the punishment for terrorist organizations. Mustafa says the charges stem from the fact that Sudan does not tolerate human rights activism. Khartoum-based human rights lawyer Saleh Mahmoud agrees, saying they are all trumped-up charges.
My point of view as a lawyer is more political than there are specific crimes that have been committed related to the penal code of Sudan.
Sudanese government spokesman Ahmed Bilal dismissed calls to drop the charges. He says the charges against the 10 are criminal in nature and have nothing to do with politics.
Can you call this is a political act? It's a criminal act, and he's in front of the court. We cannot interfere, actually. Maybe after the trial took place, and then they can call for forgiveness or something. But to stop it, this is incorrect.
Mahmoud says the 5 human rights organizations calling for the immediate release of the 10 activists spoke up at the right time.
I think their demand for the release is legitimate demand, taking into consideration the experience of the civil society here in Sudan relating to the hardships mainly coming from the government pressure and targeting the civil society movement, preventing the civil society to properly address the basic rights and freedoms of the people of Sudan.
Eight of the 10 activists were arrested at their center while training Sudanese citizens on human rights. All of their computers and documents were confiscated by security operatives. A week later, five were released but continued to be summoned and questioned about their activities by authorities. Three activists remain in detention. They were arrested in May. All 10 are being tried in the same Khartoum courtroom, although some face different criminal charges. Court proceedings are expected to resume early next week. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Prostitution in Burundi is on the rise as the government moves to curb the practice regarded as illegal in the country. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
Burundi, like many African countries, is trying to consolidate its culture in which prostitution is seen as a blasphemous. In 2009, Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza signed a new penal code that criminalizes prostitution in the country. Alexandre Ndikumana is a lawyer in Burundi.
What the law says is about the person who commits this kind of act and they do it as a normal activity. The person can be at home, can be in hostel, can be in public place, and so on. Then this is the act which has been committed by the person as a normal activity, even that activity is not allowed by the Burundian law.
Prostitution has seen a dramatic increase in the country, despite the law prohibiting prostitution in the practice. Many prostitutes in Burundi say the lack of jobs has forced them to get involved in the activity. Janine is one of the prostitutes I met on the streets in Bujumbura. She says that she has one child to take care of, that she plays a role as a father, and that at the same time as a mother. Janine says she have to look after her siblings and the mother as well back in the village. She says she has no any other option but to be a sexual worker in order to get money to clear the bills back home. She says as prostitutes, they are used to be arrested on the streets and that they shouldn't find them at their homes to be arrested. Diane, another prostitute in Bujumbura, says she was abused by the police. Diane says she was beaten and even undressed by the police. She says the police took all her belongings. Diane says it's not really good that the police would go looking for them at their homes to arrest them instead of in the streets. Pierre Nkurikiye is the Burundi police spokesman.
In order to fight against the crimes made by people who don't have something to do, this week more than 50 people involved in prostitution have been arrested here in Bujumbura capital city, in Kamenge and Kanyosha. And files will be made by after the police investigations.
According to a penal code 538, that was signed in 2009 by Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza, the law states that prostitution as a profession is punishable by the country's law. But this hasn't helped to curb the practice, which is on the rise in the country. Moses Havyarimana for VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Some actors and directors from Africa are getting the chance to learn from their counterparts working in Hollywood. After a competitive selection process, creative professionals from Africa will get to spend 3 weeks in Los Angeles visiting movie studios and taking intensive classes. Not only will they sharpen their skills in entertainment, they will also receive training to become entrepreneurs. It is all made possible through a partnership with the African Technology Foundation, Relativity Education, and the U.S. State Department. Elizabeth Lee reports from a film shoot in Los Angeles.
Scene 2, extreme take 2 marker.
Action.
Shooting a film in the heart of Hollywood was a dream that is now very real for some African entertainers.
I could scream.
It's surreal, it's amazing, it's exciting for me because
I never thought I would be here.
You have missed the deadline.
These students, all working industry professionals from different African countries, are part of a program called Hollywood in Focus. They participate in workshops and get hands-on experience to expand their knowledge base in film production. For Ejim Fortune-Kazi, learning about filmmaking here is much more visual and hands-on than back home.
It's been very practical. You can see these things. You don't just hear about them. You see them, you know how they work and all that.
The workshops also train these students to think of themselves as entrepreneurs.
You know, it's not a model anymore where you're waiting for the phone to ring to get hired into a gig. I mean, we're shifting, that this space is shifting from a gig economy to an entrepreneurial space, and a space where companies can be born, innovations can happen, and content can be distributed from independent voices.
This shift is happening because of the internet and changing technology.
So what you're finding is there are a lot of self-driven content creators. It's a lot of user-generated content. And on the consumption side, with the advent or with the growth of mobile technologies across Africa, a lot of this content can now be consumed for much less than it ever was. So the democratization of the process through digital media has empowered a whole new generation of content creators.
Who are also entrepreneurs. And these students are learning to think of themselves not only as actors or directors, but as a brand.
I see myself as an entrepreneur. The only glitch to that was I had no idea exactly how to sell my brand, because along the way you kind of sell yourself short sometimes because of the opportunities or because of the lack of the jobs.
These students say what they've learned here will not only enrich their careers, but also elevate the African film industry on the global stage.
To kind of get that experience here and, you know, put that in my own country and in my own, you know, scope, basically, just so we can be up to speed with what's happening around the world and, you know, give ourselves opportunities to be able to tell our own stories the way we want to.
After they graduate from the program, organizers say these creative professionals have the ability to positively impact their country's economy and culture through all the different forms of media. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Clashes have broken out in the capital of Gabon, Libreville, where President Ali Bongo won re-election early Wednesday in a vote that critics say was fraudulent. Protesters are reported to have set the National Assembly building on fire, chanting, "Ali must go." The Guardian newspaper reported that three people were apparently shot dead by security forces. The government has not confirmed any deaths. Opposition leader Jean Ping told AFP that Gabon security forces has stormed his party headquarters early Thursday, injuring 19 people, some of them very seriously. And Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party has called off today's Day of Defiance protest against the government of President John Magufuli. The police had declined to grant permission for the protest, accusing Chadema of trying to disturb the peace of the nation. But Peter Msigwa, a Chadema member of parliament, says the protest was not canceled, but rather postponed. That's it for this Thursday, September 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, choosing the hero, my improbable journey, and the rise of Africa's first woman president. Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize winner and president of Liberia, is a subject of a new book by River Levinson, an in-depth discussion on the life and career of Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.